Welcome to That Season Air podcast. I'm your host, Gina. Stick with me as I chat to season airs, expats and adventurers across the world, sharing their inspiring stories and interesting insights into living and working abroad. On today's show, I caught up with pro snowboarder and all-round legend, the one and only Roland Morley Brown. Roly came in to walk us through his journey from season air to competitive freestyle snowboarder, taking us all the way through to his sponsorship work riding for big names such as the North Face and Battalion Snowboards. We delve into Roly's action-packed lifestyle as well as hear all about his off-season vocation working in the film and television industry in the Gold Coast of Australia. This episode is jam-packed full of fun and sketchy stories as we find out the secret to a fearless outlook and how embracing a positive mindset led Roly to some incredible opportunities. Stay tuned as we hear Roly's tips and travel hacks to help you on your next journey, and listen right to the end as we talk Bulgarian strip clubs, pandemic pauses, and how Roly ended up in the jungle.
TV show that I've worked on for many years now. It's called I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Here's the show. Welcome to the show, Roland Morley Brown.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
You were nominated to come on the show by Maria.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
Yes. You were nominated by Maria and also mentioned on John Weaver's podcast, because apparently you were there the time he met his wife in Amsterdam. Did you know that?
The day
he met his wife, apparently you were there in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I could have been. I've been lots of places, but and that sounds like somewhere I was.
So, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about you. Where are you from and what do you do for a job?
I kind of snowboard for a living, but then I also kind of work in other jobs for a living as well. You know, I'm kind of in between this professional snowboard lifestyle and sort of working to have a fun lifestyle sort of area.
Obviously, you said you're a pro snowboarder. What is the other thing you do? What kind of line of work is that?
So in between the snowboarding seasons, Northern Hemisphere and Southern Hemisphere seasons, I normally work 3 or 4 months on one television show or another, or if there's a film happening at that time, just kind of bounce between different gigs, but it's always in that line of work, film or television, carpentry stuff, yeah.
How did you get into living and working abroad?
When I first left home, well, I grew up in the far north of New Zealand, and then my mother and I, we moved to Auckland so I could finish high school. And when I finished high school, I was like super enthusiastic about skateboarding, surfing, and snowboarding came along. I was like, Mum, I got to do that. That looks amazing. So I left high school and I moved to Queenstown, New Zealand, which is like at the bottom of the South Island, and did like my first season snowboarding and just worked at like a ski rental place, you know, the normal seasonier sort of thing. So I did that for that first winter. Loved it so much, fell in love with the lifestyle and, you know, everything that comes along with the ski town and the ski snowboard lifestyle and everything. So that season finished in New Zealand around end of September. And during that season, I met this chick in Queenstown who had a boyfriend in Meyerhofen. And she was like, oh, what are you doing? Like, for the Northern Hemisphere winter. And I was like, I don't know, I was probably just going to go back to Auckland and get a job or whatever, you know. She's like, you should, if you can come to Austria, come to Meyerhofen, and my boyfriend will probably be able to help you out with finding a job and an apartment for the season. And I was like, yeah, that sounds incredible. So I went back to Auckland, told Mum about it. I was still super young, I was still 19 at this stage, you know. Told Mum about it, she's like, well, if you can save up an airfare, for sure, why not go? And I was like, yes, sick.
So
left Auckland, New Zealand, and like first trip, big trip overseas was to Austria, Meyerhofen.
Right. Yeah. Still here. Many years later.
Yeah,
we don't need to go into numbers.
I've come and gone over the years, but this place has always felt like, I don't know, home away from home for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I did that back and forth for like 4 or 5 years in like the first beginning of my snowboard career, you could say. And those first few seasons just met such an amazing crew of people here that there was no question where I was going to go once like December rolls around in New Zealand. It's like, yep, sweet, getting my ticket, flying back to Innsbruck, getting on the Zillabahn, coming to Meyerhofen.
Did you kind of already have this career path planned?
Never planned, no. But, you know, growing up as a teenager, always skateboarding, always surfing, watching all those videos of all like the pros and all that, I always wanted to, like, man, that would be so sick to do that for a job or a living or a lifestyle, you know, like, so that was always the dream. But there was never really any formula to kind of make that work, yeah. You know, because I came up like that in like the late 90s. It's like so much different now. But coming up in the late 90s at that age, there was no path for kids. It was still looked upon as like, oh, you're just like a dirtbag skater. There was no like, if you train hard, you can go to the Olympics one day and make $500,000 a year or whatever, yeah. You know what I mean? So yeah, for sure, there was no plan for that to happen. But after, like I said, doing my first season in Queenstown and, you know, really like getting a look at what the whole seasonier ski town lifestyle kind of thing is.
Yeah, being away from home.
Being away from home, all of that stuff. I was like, man, this is cool. Carpentry went out the window. I was like, I'm not going to go back to Auckland and build houses and, you know, just go surfing in the weekends or whatever. I was like, I can live in a town and do this pretty much every day. Yeah, so that was after that first year in Queenstown, and then the opportunity came up to come to Meyerhofen, and so I jumped on that straight away. And I guess just, you know, from doing it every day, and Penken Park here in Meyerhofen is amazing, like, training ground. And back mm-hmm. then in, like, the early 2000s, it was, like, the European mecca for freestyle things. So we were up there not with any specific goal to let's train, blah, blah, get really good, blah, 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 blah. Just rode every day and really started enjoying it. Went back to Queenstown and realized that I was pretty good for someone from New Zealand, like as good as anybody else in New Zealand. And that's when I like kind of first got a little bit of a sponsorship and sort of was like, oh, hey, maybe I can work this out. And, you know, you start to get a free board and a free jacket here and there. Nice. And you're like, oh, man, I don't need to buy that, you know.
Are you allowed to mention who your first sponsorship was with?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ride Snowboards was my first sponsor.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, from the New Zealand distributor. They gave me like a board and board boots and bindings, and pretty cool. I ended up doing the New Zealand Nationals and coming second in the half pipe somehow. And they were really stoked. And, you know, they're like,
that's yeah. so cool.
Yeah.
Were you working at this time alongside this, or were you sort of living off the sponsorship?
No, there was like no money involved.
Gifting you things at that point.
Yeah, this is super entry level basic sponsorship. Like, hey, this kid maybe has a little bit of talent. Let's give him a board and see what happens, or let's give him a jacket and see what happens. No, so that whole time I was working pretty much three jobs a year. I would work in Queenstown in like a snowboard ski rental. It was called Steep and Cheap back in those days. Shout out to those guys, though, because they helped me lots when I was like, you know, 19, 20 and I didn't know anyone, and they like offered me a job and like opened me up to this whole like, I guess, scene, like New Zealand snowboard scene, which was like, you know, priceless at the time, you know, when I think about it now. So I was doing that, and then the New Zealand season would last until around about end of September sort of thing. And then I'd go back to Auckland and I'd build, you know, carpentry, building houses and stuff at this stage, just with like friends who worked for building companies and things like that, you know, like laborer on building sites, just saving extra pocket money and saving to come back to Europe for that following winter, which I'd normally leave around Christmas time.
Okay.
And then, like I said earlier, when I first traveled to Meyerhofen, I was fortunate enough to have a friend here who had a boyfriend who was pretty plugged into the town. So back then he was able to find me a job at a little ski rental place here. And hooked me up with an apartment. So I was working that ski rental place. I think I had some really cool hours. It was like maybe 7:30 till 10:30 in the morning.
Nice.
And then start again at 3:30 till maybe 6:30 or 7:30 if it was a busy evening.
Yeah.
So I had that whole middle of the day, and it was right in town, right by the gondola. So I would just leave my snowboard kit, you know, in the back of the rental shop and be like, 10:30.
Yeah.
Sweet. I'm up there just grab a Samuel, go up the gondola, ride the park for like 4 hours straight, nonstop, come back down, work. Yeah, like that.
So you're sponsored by Ride at this point, back in the day.
Back in the days, yeah.
And you were doing seasons between Queenstown and Meyerhofen. And I guess, is that what you've been continuing to do, or have there been other places in between that you've spent for a season?
Yeah, there's definitely been years where I haven't come to Europe at all. So it's like I've been coming and going from here for best part of 20 years now, for sure. But there was a few years there where I didn't come back to Europe. I did like a couple of months in Japan and then flew straight to America.
Oh, wow.
And I was kind of doing that and spent a few years, seasons doing that. Yeah, and then always found my way back here somehow. Yeah. Got cool. Just like pulled back in. But like over those first few years of when snowboarding really started to kind of be more of a focus, I was definitely based here. Like I'd fly to Europe and come to Meyerhofen, you know, and essentially kind of drop my bags and get sort of set up as much, like buy a season's pass, for example. Be as set up as you could be, and then, you know, link up with a few different people and go for trips. Like I went and stayed in Chamonix for a month 1 year, which was really nice. And then, you know, just travel around Europe as much as possible, following the snow and things like that, you know.
Nice. Yeah. I actually saw that on your Instagram. I did a bit of stalking earlier.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You've been to like so many places.
Yeah, hit loads of places. Yeah.
Is it? And it's always snowboarding, I guess.
Yeah. Easy 90% of the trips or places I've been has been for snowboarding. Yeah. That's been the main reason. It's awesome and I would never change it. But there's been times where I've been somewhere amazing, you know, that I would never ever have the opportunity to go to otherwise, other than snowboarding, but being like not had an opportunity to
explore it
or experience it, anything other than going to the airport or whatever, getting on a train, going to the resort, being there for the week, going straight back to the airport and leaving again, you know.
Like,
yeah. Like I said, it wouldn't change that.
What does being a pro snowboarder or being sponsored entail? What do you have to do?
Depends what, like these days, I think specifically, depending on what avenue you're chasing, like maybe you're a competition kid or, you know, rider. And then like being a pro would 100% entail like a nutritionist, a trainer, on snow training, off snow training. Like you'd have like this whole, like these kids that are training for aspirations to go to the Olympics and stuff, their regime is like full on, like as full on as, you know, like an Olympic swimmer or a track and field athlete. It's like that these days for those guys, I feel like, anyway. But if you're just like a old dude still cruising having fun, you just do the snowboarding and get photos taken of yourself or film something and then people watch it and maybe you inspire some people to go buy that product that you're wearing. I guess that's the essential role. Like you asked earlier, that was always like a dream. But like I said, I never really had like a plan to make that a thing. So of course, the focus was just go and be a seasonier and have fun and practice what you love doing, you know, and then anything can happen because you never know. Like who's watching in the park or what opportunities might come up from people you meet. Like, hey, we're going to go and do this trip to some place and take some photos and maybe write an article for a magazine. Sweet. Jump on board that. And then you never know what's going to happen with it.
When did it start getting a bit more serious, the sponsorship and pro riding?
My second season, I came back to Meyerhofen. So did a few of the New Zealand competitions and then did the nationals, ended up doing quite well. Started getting an idea in my head like, hey, this is pretty cool. Like maybe this is what you need to do to like maybe earn a little bit of money from this, or maybe to, you know, satisfy the sponsors a bit more so you get more gear or this and that. Or
like winning the competition.
Yeah, doing well at competitions for sure. So I came back to Meyerhofen for my second season. And again, I was living and working here in the ski rental and stuff. And I was friends with a bunch of English crew here and they were like, we're going to go out and do this competition in Chamonix. At the time, it was called the Sham Jam. What I remember was, well, it was a pretty high profile competition for here in Europe for like pros, amateurs, whatever. It was like the Sham Jam. It was a pretty big deal. People traveled from everywhere to go there. And I was like, oh yeah, maybe I could get, you know, the 3 or 4 days off work from the ski rental and come with you guys. Got a place to stay, all that. Just jumped on a train, went all the way over there. Yeah. Did the contest. I ended up winning the slopestyle. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy. Yeah, so from there, I was like, holy, wow, that's rad. I won some money, you know, and like money wasn't even much back then, you know, but like won some, I guess, notoriety or something like that. People started to know my name, I guess, or whatever, you know. And then from there, I got asked if I wanted to go on a trip to America and film for an English movie back in the day. So of course, I was like, holy, I would love to do that. It sounds amazing. Got this job though, so I like just straight up quit the ski rental job. Sorry, it was like end of January or something, like super busy, about to be February, like busiest month of the year kind of thing. No. Hey, sorry man, I'm out of here, dude. Go snowboarding. Booked a flight to Denver and went over there and like filmed for a month around Vail and around Colorado area there. And then came back to Europe after that. So like that was like the beginning of when it started to sort of be more of a priority. You know, I won a little bit of money and I was like, that can pay for the airfare. Sweet, you know, like whatever. I've worked here the last couple of months. I worked in New Zealand. I can survive. Kind of bet on myself a little bit, you could say, back then. I was like, I can do this. So, I just did it. And then,
sort of worked out.
So, yeah, but I still, don't get me wrong, I definitely wasn't making any money out of it because I was still traveling back to New Zealand and having to work there and like building carpentry and things like that to save up to come back for that next right. year, you know.
You worked hard for 6 months in New Zealand mm-hmm. to pay for your winters here.
Pretty much, yeah, yeah. And then anything that I got on top of it, like I started getting a little bit of travel budget from my sponsors back then, which wasn't much, but, you know, it was an airfare here or there, or it was enough to buy my season's pass mm-hmm. here, or, you know. So it was like little bits of savings started to pop up. Well, not even savings, little bits of extra money that I could put back into the snowboarding nice. Life, you know what I mean? When I think of like seasonier, I think of, you know, like some kid, maybe probably in England, probably.
Could be.
Probably from the UK going like, I want to go and go snowboarding.
Yeah.
And I was like, you can do it, man. Just come and get a job, do a couple seasons.
Yeah.
You'll love it. You'll have fucking hell time. I guess the biggest thing, if I could give anyone advice about it or anything like that, is like, unless you're like already have a plan or you're already kind of noticed, you know, like this guy's going to be an Olympian, but that those kids are 12 mm-hmm. you know, they're 12 or 13. If you're like a 19-year-old or a 21-year-old or whatever and you just want to have fun and stuff, don't come into it like, I want to get sponsored, I want to go and win all these contests and be the sponsored snowboard person and make, like, because there's no money, you're not going to make any money, there's no money to be made. You'll get a bunch of free stuff, but you might not get a money. But yeah, don't come into it with that attitude, because if it's going to happen, it just happens. If you just ride and, you know, be a good person and have fun, then it all works out.
Maria came on and she explained to us about backcountry snowboarding. But something I wanted to ask you about is heli skiing and heli snowboarding.
Yeah, right.
Is that literally when you're dropped out of a helicopter?
Yep, 100%. You jump in a helicopter and then they fly you up to a desired or designated peak or whatever it might be, depending on the level of the, maybe the crew or whatever the operation is, and you get dropped off and it flies away and you're left standing on top, and then you ride all the way down. I've been in a couple super hairy positions where you literally jump out and it's like fucking sketchy. What's the sketchiest? So one time in Alaska a few years ago, I was in the heli with a buddy of mine. We were the two riders and we had a guide. We dropped off our filmer and photographer on like a opposing peak across mm-hmm. the way, and me and my buddy Jake were like, yeah, we want to get dropped off up there. And it was like, we didn't really know what it was like because they hadn't been up there, like the heli pilot or the guide hadn't been up there. So we buzzed around the peak for, you know, one pass, and it was just this knife edge. If you imagine like a peak, like a knife edge, top of like a volcano, super sharp peak thing. We're like, yeah, let's get out there. The heli couldn't even land where we were, so we had to like literally stand on the skis, and he just hovered above the thing, and we had to jump off the skis, not very high, but probably, I don't know, say 6 feet, 2 meters, onto like a knife edge, which was easy 500 or 600 meters vertical drop straight down to the glacier floor below. And then on the other side was the face that we wanted to ride. So we jumped out to like a pad, maybe a meter by a meter, and had to like hold on to each other. And while the helicopter's like rotor blades are just washing all this stuff around, and it just left us there. And it's like such a surreal, crazy feeling when it's just such loud, like, you know, like crazy machine thing, to like dead calm, dead silence. And you're just like with your buddy on this knife, like, I don't know how else to explain it, but literal knife edge, where one side is death and the other side is the side you're going to ride, but it's also super sketchy and gnarly. And you don't have your snowboard on your feet at this time. So that was like one of the,
wow.
Yeah, that was one of the gnarly moments. But we made it. It was all good.
You're here to tell
the
tale.
Yeah. It's, I don't know how to describe it. Like, very, very hairy one, that one. And I think it was sketchy for those guys too. Like the guide and the pilot were not stoked, but they were, you know, some kamikaze Alaskan dudes just like, yeah, boys, rip it up. We're just like, yeah, sick. Yeah, awesome. Let's go. In New Zealand, it's pretty popular. Most of the terrain, like here in Meyerhofen or Zillertal particularly, you would hike for hours in New Zealand to get to that kind of altitude, for one, snow quality, steepness, It's like amazing here. You can see why I fell in love with it. Like, yeah. After my first season here, she's like, holy moly, this place is the place.
Yeah, I always wondered why there were quite a lot of Kiwis about and Australians as well.
Yeah, you know why? It's because I came home after that first season and was like, yeah, I've been in Meyerhofen. Come check it out. And they tell two people and those people tell, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, in New Zealand, we heli boarding and skiing is super popular. It's like a completely regular thing to do.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your time in Salt Lake.
So for no real specific reason, after that 2006 winter, I guess it was here in Meyerhofen, a bunch of Kiwi friends of mine, you know, our little snowboard posse.
Yeah.
They were like, they had already done a few seasons in Salt Lake. So obviously I had gone back to Queenstown, Wanaka and hooked up with those guys again. And like, what are you guys doing this, you know, Northern Hemisphere winter? Like, we're going back to Salt Lake, bro. And I was like, wow, really? They're like, you should come and stay with us there. And I was like, okay, I could do that. You know, I've been to Europe 6 years in a row. Why not do something else? So, yeah, for no specific reason other than just to keep rolling with the homies, I went to Salt Lake and just did a season there. And it was cool. Nothing really out of the ordinary happened. It was very American. I don't know if that makes sense to anyone. I had such a infatuation, I guess, with like the European culture and lifestyle. Then like I'd been to America, like I'd been to LA or whatever. And then I did a season in Salt Lake and I was just like, oh, this is cool. Snow's amazing. Mountain's sick. Town is, you know, like there's not much more to do other than go up the mountain and go snowboarding every day and come back and say, get drunk at night. And watch stupid movies and all that kind of stuff. But you can do that anywhere. It doesn't matter where you are. And that's kind of all we did. But it was a great time. And I hadn't really done a season with those boys before, like abroad. So it was fun in that respect.
Cool.
But one and done, you know?
Yeah. Didn't feel the need to go back.
Nah.
So then after Salt Lake, you headed across to Japan.
Yeah, that would have been the following winter. So did like a full season in Salt Lake. And then obviously went back to New Zealand. Everything revolves around going back to New Zealand over these years. Because as Kiwis, we never really sussed out our visas. You know, we get 90 days in every country, no problem. Because Kiwi passport is one of the best ones in the world, I think. Like as far as on arrival, just getting a visa, do whatever you want kind of thing. So we were never sussing out visas at these points. So it was always like on the fly kind of thing, you know, like... just go there, wing it, see what happens, leave when you want to leave, whatever, you know, no responsibility, you know, like back then we were young and just like no responsibilities, whatever, man, we just do whatever we want. Still to this day like that. But so yeah, that full season in Salt Lake and then that next following Northern Hemisphere winter, like me and a few of the same boys that I lived with in Salt Lake there were like, dude, let's go to Japan. We got to go to Japan. Look how sick it is, you know, because in snowboarding, you see so much amazing stuff coming out of Japan. Everything from like the amount of snow they get to some of the terrain that they ride. Like you see all the pros go there every single year for photo shoots. Like back in those days, like Burton and all these brands, like all these super high profile riders were coming back with amazing stuff from Japan. We're just like, yeah, let's go do that. We can do that.
So you went and what was it like?
It was incredible.
Live up to the expectation?
Oh yeah, 100% and more. Like... lived up to the expectation where like, oh my gosh, when we come back next year, it's going to be even better because we know this little much more information about the place. You know, you find that like...
yeah, you build up your information. So yeah, less and, touristy and getting on with the good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we were all completely blown away and just like, yeah, it was the best. It was the best time.
Were you pro riding at this point as well or how were you
Not pro riding, but I was substantially sponsored. Like I didn't really have to pay for my flights or I didn't really have to pay for the trip, really. You know, I was given a little bit of budget to be like, here, go. You can live in Japan off this for, you know, 6 or 8 weeks or whatever.
And you had to do some photos and things.
Yeah,
like
And we were shooting and filming and, you know, supplying, let's say, content for the New Zealand and Australian snowboard magazines. Like we were all new to the place, but we had more of defined kind of like a more of a defined agenda. Okay, we had a contact to rent a car from a guy there, so we're going to do that. This is going to cost us all this much each, and we have a car for 4 weeks. We'll travel to these spots where people have told us to go. We had a photographer. We'll shoot some photos. We can write a story for New Zealand Snowboarding Mag and Australian Snowboarding Mag at the time. make our sponsors happy, make it like they got something back from what we were doing.
From their investment.
Yeah. We were learning as we were going too. You know, it wasn't like we were just pros going and going, yeah, boom, we're going to do all this stuff. We were just like, oh shit, you know, figuring it out as we went on the fly. That first season was kind of like a learning curve kind of thing, and we absolutely figured it out. And then I went back to Japan for the next two or three seasons. Not for the whole season, but like for a month each time after that, just because it's so incredible there. And if anyone ever has the opportunity to go, I would like do it 100%. When you know the snow is just incredible, and then on top of that, you have like amazing food and cheap beer and cheap accommodation, you know, and the people are all so nice. And, you know, if you can find a way to suss out, well, we were on a snowboard trip, so we were sussing out lift passes here and there. We had a little bit of help from the tourism board and things like that. But if you're just like, if you're cruising there, it's, you'll just be like, let's go back. Let's go back. I can't, like, you'll leave saying, I can't wait till I come back, you know?
Awesome. Talking of accommodation, when you go to these different places, how do you suss that out? Or is that something that's sometimes provided for you? Salt Lake, for example, did you guys already know where you're going to stay?
Yeah, we did, because the boys that I was rolling with had done a few, like, this prior two seasons.
Right.
So they sort of already had it figured out, and they met some people around town, and they're like, oh, yeah, we can come back next year and, you know, rent a room off you. But it was classic Kiwi, Aussie ski bum style. Like, we were three in a bedroom, you know, kind of thing. We're not pretentious or anything, man. We'll just do whatever we got to do to, you know, go riding every day is what it's kind of about at the end of the day. And when you're a dirtbag snowboarder, you're not spending hundreds of dollars a week on rent. You just got to save that for beer money or something back in those days, for sure.
And in Japan, was the accommodation included in that? Or
The first season... not. We were kind of, like I said, we were figuring it all out, but we had some contacts through friends of friends and stuff, because New Zealand and Japan obviously have like a really close relationship. It's pretty close to us. It's like a 7-8 hour flight away. And lots of Japanese always come to Queenstown Wanaka, and lots of Kiwis have gone to Japan for years and years and years. So we had friends who knew friends of friends that were like, they can probably put you up. So it was like that, but it was still, you know, we were sharing rooms and, you know, like living on top of each other and, you know what I mean? Like top and tailing, but it's all part of it. Like, that's what makes those trips, because if it was all cushy and plush, it's amazing, but it's like a different vibe. You don't feel like you're, the grind is different. If it's all posh and you're getting fluff the whole way, there's no grit there. It's not raw enough for me, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
And after Japan, you went back to New Zealand again?
Yep. Those for those few seasons there that we were going to Japan, it was Japan and then like kind of Tahoe or something like that for the springtime in America. Because to be fair about Japan, it's only really, really good snow-wise December, maybe into the first or second week of February.
Okay.
So they're like, when their snowfalls come, it's like hard and heavy and like pretty quick. Like, January in Japan is amazing. When it gets to, just for example, 15th of February, mid-February, it turns spring really, really quickly. And because it's so coastal, when it stops snowing, it stays, because they have meters and meters and meters of base. But when it stops snowing, it just goes wet, heavy, thick, gluggy, and it's like not fun to ride.
No.
There's plenty of it around. Like, if you wanted to go there for a street rail trip or something like that, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Any time of the year. But if you're going on a power hunt, like, January is by far the best month to go there. It snows every day. It's crazy.
So tell us a little bit about Tahoe. What's that like?
Tahoe's really, really cool. It's I guess you could kind of say a mecca for snowboarding in America. They have loads of really, really famous spots and, I guess, terrain out there, and loads of really prominent professional riders, particularly from America, come from that area of California. And it was Tahoe purely because that one season in Salt Lake, the boys met some friends out there who were originally from Tahoe anyway, and they had a place, and it was just kind of like, you know, who you know, and you just fall in this awesome like availability of like, oh, just come and stay at my place. So it just became a thing to do.
When was the last time you went to any of these places?
Last time I was in Japan was 2019.
Okay, so not that long ago.
Not that long ago. Mm-hmm. I was there with Maria, actually, mm-hmm. and Matt McCarty.
Yeah,
you know Matt. We went over there for pretty much all of January. That year, Maria had a World Freeride Tour stop there. So we kind of planned like a really awesome mission around that contest. And we had 2 weeks in the North Island in Hokkaido. And then we flew down south to Hakuba, where Maria had the contest. And we had a week riding before the contest. She did the contest. And then she left and I ended up staying for another 2 weeks just around that Hakuba area.
You also did quite a few competitions in your time.
Yeah, I have for sure. Like in the beginning of like, I don't know, I hate calling it a career. In the beginning of my career, yeah, I was really into competing. I was, you know, on the New Zealand snowboard team, you know, and we were doing slope style contests around the place. I did like some pretty famous international contests, you know.
Did you enjoy that?
That's a good question because at the time I thought I did. Mm-hmm. For sure. Now, I don't think I did. Like if I...
In hindsight, yeah. It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, in hindsight, I don't think I enjoyed it. One, because I never... Once I got to that level, like... Yeah, there was like a big shift in freestyle snowboarding. Mm-hmm. Kind of around... And I'm probably getting it wrong, but let's say 2007 and 8 to like 2012. There was like a huge shift in what needed to be done in terms of like winning an international snow style contest kind of thing. And I was still stuck in like, let's say 2006. And I never really like got to that next level of how good you have to be and how like consistently good you have to be, which is like, it's really, really hard to understand. And like, I did it, I guess back then as a means to continue traveling to these places because I thought it was cool and all that kind
of
stuff. But
yeah,
like I had no desire to be up on the hill at 7:30 or 8 o'clock for practice runs in a icy half pipe or slope style course to do my two qualification runs and crash or, you know, like not qualify for finals or not really like, I don't really want to wreck my body for this. Like I'm not that hyped on it, you know?
No. When was the last time you competed?
So yeah, in that big shift of like level of how good everyone got and all of a sudden these certain tricks needed to be done even just to qualify for finals and stuff, I probably sort of left that, quit's not the right word. I kind of got over it is probably a better way to say it. I kind of got over that in around 2009-ish, maybe 2008, 2009, I was like, man, I can't like compete with these kids. Because then I was 27, mm-hmm. 28 years old, already like one of the way older people because you already had 17, 18, 19-year-old kids who were much better than me. And they're, you know, super happy to go up at 8 o'clock in the morning and ride all day on an icy course to learn all these tricks. And I was like, oh, man, I did that in my first seasons when I was a seasonee. I don't really want to do it anymore. And it kind of like the chances of me hurting and injuring myself way outweighed like my chances of winning and making some money or podiuming. How do you say that word?
Podiuming.
Yeah, podiuming.
I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. You know, the risk completely outweighed the reward for me of doing these contests back then. And like, I used all the like knowledge and experience I had gained over all those years of traveling and shooting photos and stuff like that to kind of be like, I really just kind of want to focus on, like shooting or filming for a project or something like that, which is like way, way better, way chiller. Like you're kind of more on your own program. You don't really have to, you know, adhere to any schedule or anything like that, which is like, which I just fell in love with. I was like, cool, man. I can just be on my own time. And when I'm feeling it, I can go do it. And when I'm not feeling it, I can have a day off or I can just not do it and be with a crew who is like hyped and just be there to help dig the jump or, you know, like help suss out
with
a spot.
Yeah,
with the production side of it and things like that. Yeah.
It sounds like you were definitely over.
I was definitely at those years. I was definitely over like the hype of what you needed to be like a top freestyle snowboarder. So I had those quite a few years off, and then Over those 4 or 5 years off not competing and just shooting and filming for various different projects, I started spending way more time in the backcountry and way more time like appreciating free riding and riding lines and things like that, and like things where I feel like the effort is so much worth the reward, like hiking, say, for 3 or so hours to ride one awesome line down like a crazy looking mountain. So I really fell in love with that stuff. And then from there, I started watching guys on the Freeride World Tour and things like that. And I was like, oh, maybe that could be like another little avenue that I could go down to kind of, not that I wanted to get back into competing, because I'm not, I feel like I'm not really like a competitive person at all, you know, but just, I guess, to be fully honest, it was kind of a thing like, the sponsors all like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Of course, like,
Yeah, if I did that, they'll like that. So I did that, and I tried for a few years on the qualifier, Freeride World Qualifier Tour. But I came close a couple of years. It's really brutal cut. Like that in snowboard men, from the qualifying tour, from the whole region of Europe and Oceania, one person goes to the tour.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's like, it's super cutthroat. I came third a couple of years.
That's
I mean,
really
I was
good.
Pretty happy with it, but obviously it wasn't good enough or anything. But it's so tough to get that one spot for the tour, you know? Yeah.
Can you explain briefly what freestyle snowboarding is?
Freestyle snowboarding is basically anything, I mean, I guess the easiest way to describe it is anything you would see in the terrain park up at the local mountain. Hitting the jumps, hitting the rails, the half pipe, anything of those kind of disciplines.
Maria explained to us what backcountry was, but just the difference is
backcountry basically is anything that's not in the ski boundary. Mm-hmm. So you can be at a resort and you can be riding around on the pistes and you can be riding powder between the pistes and stuff like that. But generally that's all in the ski area boundaries. So as soon as you start going outside those boundaries, that's generally what everyone considers backcountry.
So it's a bit of a transition to go from one to the other.
Yeah. It's a huge learning curve for a lot of people. Like there's so much more things you need to know and be aware of, and you can't just really just walk out there, you know. Yeah. Like, I mean, you can.
What was the
biggest?
Of course
you can, but but you learn.
What was the biggest learning curve going from one to the other?
I guess for me was learning to kind of read the mountain. I don't know if that makes sense to you or anyone listening, but like, if I could give an example, it would be like, if you're standing at the top of, say, a terrain park at the mountain, you have like the jumps in a row, you see them there, they have the rail set up, they have the jump at the beginning of the rail, and then you're on the everything is set up for you. And you're like, okay, I need to go off that to get onto that to land there, for example. Yeah. So when you go in the backcountry, there's nothing. You just kind of see mounds of snow and lumps and rolls and all this kind of stuff. For me, the biggest learning curve was learning to see that and being like, oh, maybe if I started there and went as fast as I could go off that and land maybe down in that bit or go over that bit or use that bit as a place to do a turn and then drop down into there to hold my speed or something like that, you know? Yeah, you figure it out for yourself. And like, you can 100% learn that, but some people are just gifted with that. Some people are just like, I don't know, second nature, you know, they just, it's past even seeing it, you know, it's kind of cool. Like they just know it. Yeah. It's, and when you are with someone or you see someone ride that is feeling it, you know, like way past knowing it, like just in it, then you can, then you can 100% tell. Yeah.
We talked earlier about you being on the knife edge and that being a very sketchy experience. You are quite a daredevil, if you like. You just throw yourself into things. What is the overall sketchiest experience you have ever had?
I don't know, man. I do a lot of sketchy stuff. Yeah, there's so many. I don't know what it is. Like you said, I was maybe like a bit of a daredevil or something, but I don't like think like that. But I guess, I don't know, you just get this kind of like whatever sort of attitude. I don't know how to explain it probably without sounding like a dick or something like that. Well, I always remember this quote from when I was a kid or something. I don't know who said it or whatever, but like do something every day that scares you. Yeah, and I guess that really, really resonated with me. And I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, that sounds sweet. That's how you should not like death defying, you're gonna like die kind of shit, but like something out of your comfort zone sort of thing every day that makes you kind of, you know, like, oh shit, that was cool. You know, get a little butterflies, get a little bit of adrenaline going, you know, because the more you do that, the more you kind of get addicted to that. And like that borderline of being out of control, but just enough to be in control where you're like, whoo, shit, this shit is sketchy. That line is really rad. And that's like, I feel like a cool place to live.
Yeah. Always challenging yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Challenging yourself. That's a nice, polite way to say it. Yeah, I would never call myself an adrenaline junkie in the way that like base jumpers are.
Yeah.
Or that,
would
that,
you not do that?
I would 100% do that.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, but I don't do it. I don't have the opportunity to do it.
I would prove my point.
Yeah, yeah, but I would do it if like, if I had like some practice and some training and stuff. If some guy was like, here, here's my chute, jump off that.
No,
I'd be like, no, I'm probably going to die.
Yeah.
But if they're like, hey, you can come and train, we'll do a couple of like practice jumps and stuff, and then you can do it. We're like, yeah, let's go. That'll be fucking cool.
Have you had many injuries in your line of work? Like, you do so much stuff.
For sure. Back in the learning days and stuff, you know, in the progression days, for sure. Like, bunch of injuries. Both my knees were fucked. Shoulders fucked. It's got plates and screws in it.
Oh, goodness.
Broke my wrist and arm in three different places and shit. Yeah, just like all the normal shit you get from crashing. Yeah. Well, it's normal in the sense that if you're
if you're pushing yourself.
Yeah, if you're pushing yourself and you kind of have these goals of like, I want to learn this trick, whatever it might be. Yeah, you put your body on the line to do it. If you have that drive, you know.
What is it that pushes you to do that?
I don't know. That's a good question. Like, maybe it's that like adrenaline scare yourself kind of thing, you know? Like maybe that has a big part in it. Or maybe it's the little voice maybe in the back of your head that says like, oh, if you want to achieve this, you know, if you're aspiring to be a pro rider or whatever it might be, you need to learn this if you want to be, that guy's doing it, so you need to be able to do it sort of thing, you know? But yeah, but I think it's just like also natural, like a human nature thing of natural progression. Like, for example, oh, I've already done the 360, now I need to do the 540.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just going to do 360s forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to be honest about all that stuff, I stopped progressing a while ago.
Yeah, but you still would go base jumping if the opportunity arose.
Yeah,
arose.
Yeah,
so it's not like you've totally stopped.
Yeah.
On your Instagram, I saw you'd been to Alaska.
Yep, that's right.
What drew you to Alaska?
What drew me to Alaska and has always drawn me there was just watching the amazing footage of snowboarding that has come out of there over the past, 30 years? What are we, 2021 now? Yeah, let's say 30 years, like early 90s. Mm-hmm. These guys were going up there, jumping in helicopters and like way, way more renegade than anything you could ever imagine, you know?
Wow.
And just like pointing, drop me off there. And just riding down this insane, steep, crazy, like, you wouldn't even, you'd be like, no thanks. Straight up, no thanks. So seeing that as a kid and growing up, whatever, I was like, oh my God, that like one day, if I could like manifest every positive vibe or like everything, like, I hope I get to go to Alaska one day.
Wow.
And I've been fortunate enough to go twice, which, super thankful for. Yeah, so like what drew me there, like I said, was seeing all this amazing footage and like so much of snowboard history, or so many pioneers of snowboarding have gone there and just like pushed the limits of what can actually be done on these fucking sticks, you know, that we slide around on.
Yeah.
So it's always been the Mecca, you know, it's like the holy grail. It's like you could attribute it to maybe like surfing pipeline. Or, I don't know, what else is fucking cool? I don't know, what do?
I podcast.
Yeah, you podcast.
Is it like the Joe Rogan?
It's like the Joe Rogan experience. Going to Alaska is like being invited on the Joe Rogan podcast. Anyone who's a fan of skiing and snowboarding, like the things that can be done there and have like pushed the sport to its limit has been in Alaska.
Cool.
Yeah. So that is like 100% the biggest draw card. And, you know, anyone aspiring to do anything with their career is like, want to go there one day. You know what I mean?
I don't know why that stood out for me, because yeah, it's incredible. You've been to so many places. If we were to talk about every country that you've been to after scouring your Instagram all day, which is what I've been doing,
really
been stalking
sick.
You to make
you're the one that's been liking all this. I got a like from like, I don't know, 102 weeks ago. I was like, what? People going deep, man.
That probably was me. If we went through every place that you've been to, we would run out of time. So what are like your top five places?
You know, like I said earlier, primarily a lot of these trips are just based around a snowboarding trip. So I don't really get an opportunity to see much of like, you know, a much more of say the country or whatever, or the culture or anything like that. But yeah, for sure, I've done a couple of trips where it's just been a fun holiday. Just off the top of my head, like Alaska, Japan, well, Alaska's America, but Alaska is its own entity in itself. Alaska, Japan, Europe's like amazing in itself, you know?
Yeah.
Like, but like I had like amazing times in Macedonia. And like I've been to Greece and it was just blew my mind and shit like that, you know, like
Did you snowboard in Greece?
Yeah, we did. We went
Even know you could snowboard in Greece.
I didn't either until we got there, really.
How was it?
It was amazing. Yeah, we went on like a Method Mag trip this one year, a few years ago, and we flew into Athens, jumped in like a rental van thing, drove, I think it was maybe 6 or 7 hours north. So it's like a lot closer to Macedonia, Bulgaria. You know, it's like the top of Greece. Drove up there and they have like a range of mountains, which is like on the backside. Yeah, I hope I'm right, but I want to say Macedonia range there. They had pretty amazing terrain and some really good snow. And they had like a really dope community resort up in the Alpine there where they had a little terrain park and a couple of T-bar Pommer lift things. And
cool.
Yeah, it blew my mind. It was, it was fucking sick.
When COVID is over, where's the first place you want to go?
Bali. Yeah, man, I'm going to go surfing. I've been stuck in Central Europe for a year and a half. I'm going to go surfing in warm water, just in boardies, like perfect left-hand barrels, man. Yeah, Bali, straight up Bali, for 100%. So here's a little backstory. So for the past 5 years or so, my girlfriend Maria and I, we've been doing our season based here in Meyerhofen. And then leaving here May, end of May-ish, setting ourselves up in Bali for a few months, going back to New Zealand, riding a little bit of the New Zealand winter. Maria normally goes back to Bali and sees out the year there or does one of her architecture excursions. And I go to work in Australia and do the film TV industry thing. So Bali's kind of also, for us, become like a little home away from home.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we're completely set up there. We have a ton of friends there. We know it now, you know, we've gone past that point of being a couple of week sort of travelers and actually lived there and experienced it and got to know like a good local crew and, you know, so it's very, very easy for me to say when you ask me where would I go, I'm just going
to Bali.
Go back to Bali. It's warm, hot, sunny, pumping waves. Also, no one there because the travel restrictions and all that kind of stuff. Just want to go surfing, man.
You've sold it.
Yeah.
Don't tell everyone.
You can't go.
Is there anywhere you haven't snowboarded yet that you'd like to snowboard still?
Yep, 100%. So for the past couple years, I've really been pushing for kind of to find an excuse to go to Georgia.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yep. I don't know why. I just have like this really cool
random
feeling about it. If you Google pictures of Georgia and the mountains they have around, I don't know how to say the area properly. Miesta, maybe? I don't know. Forgive me if I'm saying it wrong. But there's a range of mountains there that look incredible. And again, it's one of those like off the beaten path sort of places that like you can get an amazing cultural experience. The snow is incredible. The terrain is incredible. And just as like a package sort of out of the box sort of trip or expedition, mission, whatever you want to call it, that would be like top of my list for sure.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, really unusual. I've never heard of like anyone going, oh, I just want to go to Georgia.
Yeah, yeah. You know where else would be really cool? Azerbaijan, which is like full east of East Block. I don't know how to describe it. Like over there, they have another, like a range of mountains where like super untouched. They have like a small resort, maybe just a few hotels, probably a bar, something like that, you know. Incredible terrain, amazing snowfall, completely out the box sort of place for a vacation or, you know, a trip or something like that. Like for me, when you ask places that I want to go to, like the first thing I always think of is like, what would make a cool story?
Yeah.
You know, like to be purely bluntly honest, how am I going to sell this to someone who can pay for it? You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
Yeah. So like, let's
that's
go.
That's how you make a living at the end of the day.
Yeah. Like, let's go to Georgia. Let's go to Azerbaijan. Let's go somewhere where like we can find some cool shit, write something about it, take some photos, make a movie, show some, inspire some people to, you know, go to either, not specifically even that destination, but like, man, let's, you know, let's go to Bulgaria. Let's go to somewhere. Let's not just go to, I don't know, Teen or Chamonix, which, don't get me wrong again, is also sick, but, you know, you can experience mad shit if you, you know.
Think outside the box.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've actually been to Bulgaria.
Yeah, me too. Twice.
I went there on my first ever snowboarding holiday.
Did you? Where'd you go? Did you go, is it Bansko?
I could not snowboard at all. Yeah. I went 2 years running and I was crap at snowboarding. I'm not much better now, but I was so shit at snowboarding back then. It was so hard because I was 25 when I started snowboarding, something like that. Yep. And so I was a bit older, a bit more like not as agile.
Yeah, already super cautious.
Yeah,
right?
Already super cautious. Yep. And so the first two holidays
but
were
why
crazy.
There? What was is that like a popular place for?
It was cheap.
Yeah, it was cheap. Okay.
Yeah, super cheap. And I
is that like advertised in packages?
For, it wasn't a package. Obvious,
like I'm assuming from the UK scene, like, hey, let's go to Bansko.
I never heard of it. I had gone through a breakup, actually, and my roommate, who was a lad, wanted to try snowboarding. And like five or six of his mates were going.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, do you want to come? Like, you're not in a very good place. Like, fancy a holiday? And I was
really? Oh, that's amazing.
So I was like, fuck it. Yeah, let's go. I'll come with you. Honestly, it was the hardest thing ever. I fell over. Like, I didn't bother getting lessons because someone said to me, oh, no, don't worry. I've done this loads of times. I can teach you.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So I wasted a week's holiday pretending I could try and snowboard, which was grueling, but absolutely loved it. And if I hadn't have done that, I probably wouldn't be sat here now.
Yeah, right on.
So pretty cool to actually go and do that.
You enjoyed Bansko, though? You know, like going out and being in that town and like experiencing sort of like... resort.
Yeah, it
that
was
resort, you know what I mean?
It was different to anything I'd ever done before. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'd never been in a ski resort at all.
Yeah, and you got thrown in a Bulgarian one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Strange experience, but lovely. Lovely people.
We got chased out of the strip club there with a guy with a knife, eh?
Did you? I got pinned down by two strippers for using their pole.
Oh, really? Sick. That's even better. It was probably the same fucking club then. Yo, what year was this?
This was 2010 or 11.
Yeah. That's probably there.
Do you remember me?
You were that chick on the pole, right? Right after that, we got chased out of there with this dude with this massive knife. It was fucking crazy. So we were talking about out the box kind of like...
Yeah.
I've never been to Russia, which I think would be very, very cool experience.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not really anything crazy out the box anymore, you know, like since you can pretty much go there if you apply for a visa or whatever. It's not a big deal. But
interesting place, though.
Yeah, I would love to go there and experience that for sure. I've never been to anywhere in Africa, like the continent of Africa.
Really?
No, never. Like planned, I've had planned more than one occasion a trip to Morocco because it was like a boat, like a surf / snowboard kind of trip. They have like coastal, but they also have, I think it's called the Atlas Mountains there, which back up right to the Sahara. So you can go snowboarding and surfing there, which has kind of always been like a rad crossover kind of trip that you sort of would, you know, if those trips kind of pop up, those are the ones where you're like, yeah, I want to go on that one. That sounds like a really good time. Like anywhere else in Africa also, you know, like my mum traveled a bunch, like as a young woman to like Ethiopia and these places, Sudan and stuff. And she's always told me amazing stories and experiences from that.
Cool.
So if we like move past the snowboarding sort of side of things, like those kind of places would be really cool, I think.
Yeah. Going through this whole conversation, it's pretty clear that you live life to the fullest. All I wanted to know really is that planned? Do you plan to live life to the fullest, or do opportunities just tend to find you?
It's got to be yes to both, because I feel like if you don't do one, the other's not going to happen, you know? Like, you can't just live this mundane life and all of a sudden have all these amazing opportunities thrown at you. You got to kind of be out there and be open to anything, open to any experience, meeting people, anything like that. And then that's where these opportunities come from. Surprisingly, more often than not, if you're fun-loving, you know, down for a good time, whatever, like someone in your lifetime is going to be like, hey, you want to do this?
Yeah.
And then it's up to you to be like, fuck yeah, let's do that. And then by doing that, then all of a sudden some other person's going to be like, yo, you want to do this thing? And you're like, yeah, shit, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah. And then it's just this, like, you just create this momentum of good times. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know any better word for it. But like, I guess in the beginning, the seasoneer lifestyle of just putting yourself out there and meeting new people and experiencing all this new shit happening, it's like just happens, you know?
Yeah. You just got to be in it to win it.
You got
to
be, yeah, exactly.
And that's sometimes the toughest thing, isn't it? It's making the first step.
Yeah. Making the first step, just like throwing your hat in the ring and being like, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, I'm down. I guess for a lot of people, that's a major step, but that shit gets so easy the more you do it. All of a sudden, you're so comfortable that there's no outside your comfort zone, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, first couple of things, you might be like, oh, that's a bit risky, I don't know what to do. Do it. Shit works out good. Next one is less, like, you know, you already have less inhibitions about doing the next thing, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, like the momentum of that, like it never stops and nothing is uncomfortable anymore.
Are there any opportunities or unlikely stories, perhaps, which stand out to you that you wouldn't have had if you didn't lead this lifestyle of living and working abroad?
Yeah, short answer, all of them.
I get that a lot.
Yeah, all of them.
It brings a lot.
100%, man. I can't even imagine what I would be doing or like what my life would be like or anything like that if I, for example, where back after my first season in Queenstown, like I mentioned earlier, like my friend offered, like, hey, do you want to come to Meyerhof? And my boyfriend has a apartment. You can probably, you know, he can probably help you find an apartment and a job. I can't even imagine what my life would be like if I hadn't have said yes to that. And then from that is like the catalyst of my whole life. Like I was 19.
Yeah.
You know, that's 20 years ago. And I was just like, that just changed everything for me. Everything. Like, no question. Yeah, like I said, I always had those dreams or aspirations or whatever to be a professional snowboarder or skateboarder or surfer. It wasn't even a particular box I wanted to put myself in back in those days. I just loved the idea of that lifestyle. Mm. And that was like the first step to it. And if I had missed that opportunity, say, I'd have no idea what I would be doing. At no point I was thinking like, I need to do this if I want to reach this dream. It just felt right. Yeah. You know, like it just felt like something I should do. Maybe it was the environment. Like my mum was always super encouraging. She traveled as like a young woman. She was like a ski chalet chick in Switzerland and stuff like that. So I already kind of grew up with that sort of like, you can travel, you can go do whatever you want to do, you know, like travel, have a good time. Do your thing, like the world is your playground. Do whatever the fuck you want to do. Yeah, like to clarify, there was never that goal of like, I'm going to travel, I'm going to be a really good snowboarder, I'm going to get paid to snowboard, which is going to keep me traveling for the rest of my life. It was like, I'm just going to have fun and fuck yeah, this shit's awesome, you know? Yeah, it was pretty simple plan that I had for myself.
And you made it work.
Yeah, I made it work now, yeah. Yeah.
In the end.
In the end, I made it work. Shit, I really need to get a job, man.
What's the most challenging thing about living a lifestyle where you're on the move all the time?
Nothing is challenging in the sense of like, oh shit, where am I going to be next? Because that's all part of it. That's the exciting part. If anything, that's the goal kind of thing, you know? Like if there is a challenge, it's like, where am I going to go next? what am I going to do in 4 months from now? Where am I going to be? And then you plan around that or something, you know, like, yeah. I guess if anything is challenging, it's planning shit because you don't have a plan, you know, like you might have a plan for the next 6 months. But for me, for the past 10 or 12 years, thinking 9 months ahead of now is like inconceivable or something, you know, yeah. like incomprehensible. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I can't plan that.
Especially now.
Even especially now, yeah. yeah. Like, I mean, it was tough two years ago, a year and a half ago. And now it's like, yeah.
Got to embrace it.
Yeah, you got to embrace it for sure. Sometimes I feel challenged, I guess you could say, from family, friends, things like that. Like a lot of my friends from New Zealand that I grew up with, like my old bestest friends and stuff like that, they're married now. They have kids. They've got a house, mortgage, all that shit going on in their lives. They're like, you know, advancing in their careers of whatever it might be. And I'm the short and thick of it is I'm still living that, season-air lifestyle, you know, like I'm yeah. still just doing whatever I want to do. I have no set plan, no set goals or anything in particular. Like I obviously have goals, but nothing short term, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe I get like, if there is anything challenging, it's the challenge from friends and family saying like, oh, what are you doing with your life? When are you going to do this and that and this? Yeah. And like, I'm not ready to conform to that.
It's
trap? It's not a trap. That's not the right word.
It's societal pressure, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to describe it. So the societal pressure of being like, you should probably get a career. Mm. But you know, to most people, a career is some job that they yeah. fucking hate, you know? What is with that slogan of when you're going to get a real job? When you're going to settle down?
I feel like that
get a real
should be the tagline.
Great. That, yeah, that works.
When you're going to get a real job.
Yeah. I love that. Use that for sure. But yeah, you know, that's like been kind of like a tagline that I've heard consistently. Definitely, let's say over the last 10 years, maybe more specifically over the last 7 or 5 or something like that, you know?
It's mad because in my eyes, you're mega successful.
Really?
In a lot of people's eyes, you are. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're living a life you want to live.
Uh-huh.
And that is success.
I think so. I think that's a good definition of that kind of shit. Like, I don't want to be unhappy and just doing this 9-to-5 shit. Like, yeah, maybe you're earning great money and you have some fucking assets or whatever and you got a dope car or whatever you desire,
yeah,
you know what I mean,
like,
which is
fine to do that.
It's fine. I don't diss that at all. It's fucking cool. But you know where you're gonna be in 3 months. I don't, and I think that's awesome. I got like a board bag and like a travel bag and a backpack and I can bounce to anywhere I want, like tomorrow. Well, not tomorrow obviously, because these damn restrictions.
Yeah, let's talk about your COVID experience. What was that like?
I think I can only describe it as positive because I've been having a great time.
Yeah.
You know, like, no disrespect to anyone that's had to do it tough or anything like that. And I think I set myself up in a position where I could enjoy it.
You were here in Meyerhofen though.
Yeah, for the whole time. I've been stuck here since the beginning of that season, essentially.
Yeah,
yes.
So you came here for the season, then COVID hit.
Yep. This is the longest I've spent in one place in probably 12 years.
How's it been?
Great. Loved every moment of it.
I think Maria quite enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, I think so too. And to just go into a little bit of mine and Maria's relationship too, this has probably been somewhere where she's spent the most time in definitely 10 years. And for us together as a partnership, this is the most time we've spent together in like 5 years.
Really?
yeah. For real.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So that's been a good learning curve too for both of us, you know, like learning how to live with each other for an extended period of time, because it's always amazing. it's always so amazing. But we both come from this lifestyle or attitude, maybe you want to say, of like, you know, sweet, I'm doing this for 4 months and then I'm there and then I'm there and then I'm there. And she's really like such an individual person and on her own program and doing her own thing that we both had to like kind of stop and like have a breath and like realize like, oh fuck, we can't actually go anywhere. So we need to, you know, we need to deal with this and make it work and, you know, yeah have fun with it, which it has been. It's been incredible.
Yeah, you two go on adventures like all the time.
Yeah, we do.
It's so cool.
I love it. That's another really awesome thing that like I wouldn't change anything in the world for being stuck here, specifically in Zillertau.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because out of all the years that I've spent here, which have primarily been strictly winter months, you know, and then I would always bounce at the end of winter, end of April, something like that. This is the first time I've ever spent a summer here. And I've learned so much about this region, like the different areas, hiked to different peaks that I would have never done, biked to all these different places, like learned so much more about this specific area after being here, like,
yeah,
let's say 15 years,
wow.
You know? Yeah, completely enjoyed it. Like, there's absolutely nothing I would change. Like, I mean, just for shits and giggles, whatever, like I could have been stuck in Bali. That would have been fucking awesome and just surfing the whole time. But here was amazing because I got to spend a lot more time with my friends from here, got to learn a lot more about my local surroundings, got to really kind of immerse myself a little bit more in the Zillertal culture, Tyrolean culture, say, you know.
Where were you supposed to be?
Yeah, so the normal rotation would have probably been end of April, May-ish, back to Bali.
Okay.
And base myself there pretty much until August, something like that. And then I would have gone back to New Zealand and done a little bit of our New Zealand winter, Southern Hemisphere winter, and then gone to Australia and worked some film or TV, television show, and then come back here. And that time has just passed. Like, can't even believe how quick that time's gone. Like, next week's 1 year.
It's mad.
Mad.
You said you work on movie and TV shows.
Yep.
I do want to touch on this.
Yeah, yeah, go for it.
Would you mind telling us where you work in the winter, in the UK winter months anyway?
Yeah, so the normal rotation, like I said, is here in Europe until beginning of May, Bali until beginning of August, New Zealand until around about the end of September, and then I go to Australia to start work on a TV show that I've worked on for many years now. I always keep going back to it. It's called I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. I can't even say that with a straight face. So I work on that show. Yeah.
It's so funny because I never used to watch much reality TV, but there was only one show I'd watch.
And it was that?
It was
Get
that.
Out. Wow. Yeah. Why that one?
I think it's because I am absolutely petrified of spiders.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I think it's that weird thing where you want to watch, you know, that whole thing that you're afraid of on
that.
The TV, I'm, right in your face.
I hate them too. They're terrible.
But what do you do?
On the show?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I work within the art department.
Right.
So I build a lot of the games and the sets that we use inside the jungle there and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily when it comes time for shooting, like when all the celebrities are on site and things like that, I'm Ranger Rolly. I dress up like, you know, a ranger. And I'm like the guy that goes on screen and delivers all the yucky food that they have to eat. Or I tip like all the sludge or guts or whatever the fish guts or, you know, might be on the contestants. Yeah.
Do you enjoy it?
I love it.
I mean, it's pretty fun.
Love it. It's amazing. I fucking love
it. It's gotta be fun.
Yeah.
Do you have to go near them spiders though?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I hate that.
Man.
But, you know, I love the show and everything. I hate the spiders when I have to deal with that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Like all the critters and stuff we use. But I just suck it up. And like if you're doing it and you're in front of the whole crew and all the cameras are pointed on you and shit, you just gotta like do it, you know, and pretend it like it ain't no thing or whatever, you know.
So you're all right with the snakes?
No, I hate all of them.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I guess maybe like I'm chill with the rats, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hate the cockroaches, hate the ants. The ants bite. Hate the spiders, hate the snakes. Snakes feel weird, man. I come from New Zealand, so we're brought up with like a mindset of like, we don't have any of that weird shit that Australia has, you know? So as a kid, you're not like, you don't go to like the petting zoo and all that kind of stuff and touch a snake as a kid in New Zealand. In Australia, I imagine you would because you have snakes in your backyard kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
I'm still not even used to it. It's I can't even say that, but yeah.
What year was your first one?
My first year on that show would have been 2011, I think, or 12. I didn't, like, just go straight into the Ranger Rolly role.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of, like, worked my way up and stuff. Like, I went in as, like, a full, you know, I was a runner, like a full newbie shit kicker dude.
How did you even get that job?
So my girlfriend at the time, she worked in film and television, and she had met a few crew through being in the industry there. like how it works in that industry is like the whole kind of crew just rolls on to the next job.
Next production.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's one of the great things about that industry is if you don't want to take that next job, you don't have to. And then you just can have, you know, if you're comfortable, 3 months off or whatever. There's no like you work for us all year and you might get 2 weeks holiday or whatever. It's like you work hard for 4 months, like the duration of the shooting, and then you can do whatever the fuck you want. So at that time, yeah, my girlfriend was changing jobs from one show to another, and she went on to that show, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and it's filmed in the bush, just like west of Gold Coast, pretty much in Australia, in the jungle. And I had just returned from a New Zealand winter. She had made friends with the people that work in the art department and stuff, and they needed a runner, and like a runner is essentially the go-getter. So full like entry level job. So I did that and I got to know the guys and mentioned to them that I had done an apprenticeship carpentry and I'd been building and blah, 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 blah. And I really enjoyed it. And it was actually the first time that I'd ever kind of done anything in that film and television industry, you know? It's like, damn, this is sick. I like this gig. And so I did that. And then I was like, do you guys think there's a job for me next year? And they're like, yeah, for sure, we'll have you back. So then I came back the next year as a runner again. And then the year after I was like a laborer. And I did that for a couple of years. And then the next year I was like a TA, which is like a trade assistant, which is a little bit more on the tools and you're actually building the sets and things like that. And then did that for a year. And then the year after I was just Ranger Rolly, which is in the film and television industry, it's standby. So you're like, I was like the art department representative on set. So right. Like you're the guy from the art department there to do all the last little detail stuff. Like you work with the camera guys, the sound guys, the lighting guys. If they need a hole drilled in the set, then you do that for them. Then you touch it up with paint and, you know, all the last bits and pieces, especially with like a show like that that's done fully on location. You know, there's a lot of like we're working right up until the last minute to get everything prepared before they bring the contestant in. So I was that, and then that role just comes with being the ranger, which is the guy that brings the thing on. And then it became a thing with like Anton Deck and these guys, like, oh, Ranger Rolly, let's get him out here. And I was like, yeah, sick. And I just went with it. I just kind of like threw myself into it, like, yeah, fuck you, I'll do you. Hey boys, how's it going, you know, like shit like that. And it was cool, yeah? And then everyone kind of liked it, and it sort of kind of became a thing.
Yeah, it sounds like a good job.
It's amazing, yeah. And like, unfortunately this year, I couldn't get back to Australia to do it. Otherwise, I would have been there in like a heartbeat to go do it, yeah.
So when the celebrities are actually in the jungle, are they actually really immersed in the jungle?
Yeah, yep.
Well, thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah,
I always
thought,
they must like get a bit of help in there and blah, blah, blah. But
They definitely don't get help in the sense where like they can only eat what they win. So if they don't win the food, they go hungry, for sure.
Yeah.
And when they eat that gross shit, they absolutely eat it. It's fucking disgusting. Like, I've been standing next to those people when they have to eat, like, the pig's anus or, like, like a fermented duck's egg and shit like that. It's fucking gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen some person eat blended flies, like pureed flies, like legitimately put flies into a blender. Like, if you imagine one of those what do you call them? The ninja? Fruit ninja things? You know, like those ninja juices?
Yeah.
Put like a couple of hundred flies in there and blend them up and drink it. That shit is gross, man. And that's they drink minging. It.
Wow.
Minging. Minging. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah. So like they do 100% do it tough.
Yeah.
Like for sure they come from like the Versace 5-star hotel, then they do it rough and you know, and they get pissed off and they create the drama, and it's like, it's pretty authentic.
Well, you probably would be like a bit aggy if you were in the jungle and you've just been at your 5-star. Yeah,
you would be. Yeah, you would be for sure. Yeah.
Not you though, Rolly. You're like a 3-to-a-bedroom kind of
guy. Yeah. I'm like, what, like half a star, I'm happy. Cheers guys, half a star. What? This place is 1-star? Sick.
Coincidentally, that's what they win on the show.
Yeah, 1-star. Yeah. Coming from a person who's never watched the show or grown up with it or like knows the history of it or whatever, like I make all those stars And like so many people, so many people hit me up like, oh, can you get one for me? Like, what the fuck?
Give me a star.
You want one of these stars? For real? That sucks. I got one. I got one signed by Anton Deck.
Oh my God. Yeah. What are they like?
They're okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. They're great. They seem like
nice chaps.
Yeah. I mean, as far as like anyone at that level of celebrity goes within that industry, you know, like they, like those first couple
of
years.
They're doing their job.
Yeah. They're doing their job. They're full on professionals. But, you know, it took a couple of seasons and then they were like, oh, it's you again. I'm like, yeah, it's me, guys. Hi. They're like, oh, yeah. What's your name? Yeah. Rolly. Oh, you're fucking Rolly. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, then. For the last couple, it's been like, Rolly! Like, yeah!
And Dick.
And Dick. Who are you guys again? You guys famous?
Yeah. We've got right on a tangent now.
So it's all part of like the my yearly seasonaire cycle. Yeah. Like, that's a season for me, if you want to like kind of define it. Yeah. I go there and work for a season, which is 3 months or three and a half months pretty much.
Cool.
Yeah. All the years that I've worked on it, you know, you definitely get that family vibe, you know, like it's always the same for me. Like going back to work on that show is like, yes, I get to see all these people again. I know we're gonna get to do some amazing things together, build some cool shit, have so much fun, you know, like yeah,
cool.
It's great. And we really, really get looked after on that show too when we go there as crew. Yeah, it's like we get, it's a pretty much a holiday for us too. We get put up in a hotel and, you know, all our meals and stuff are all catered for and everything, you know? Yeah,
nice.
It's great. It's great.
You're pro riding now for North Face and Battalion, is that right?
Yep.
So I guess you're working on your own or with a small crew a lot of the time rather than on a big production.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's always kind of with the small crew. It sort of just generally goes that way, you know? The smaller crew, the better, you know, a bit tighter, things like that. Yeah, but also going back to Australia and going back into that, you know, it's super tough work. Like, it's full on work. Like, we work every single day for 12 hours a day for like 8 weeks straight.
Mm-hmm.
Easy. Like, no days off, nothing. Like, you have no time to do anything other than go home, go to sleep, wake up, go to work, go home, go, like, for like, I think the longest I worked was 67 days in a row. 12 hours,
right.
Sometimes 13, sometimes 14 days, in like hours a day in a row. It's full on. So you know what you're getting yourself into. And I really enjoy that because I love that like challenge of putting myself in that mindset of being like, okay, I'm going to go in here. I'm going to smash this shit out for, you know, like let's say 12 weeks and fucking, you know, earn a bunch of good money because that's basically what it comes down to as well. And have a hell time and hang with this whole completely separate crew of people that is not in my, you know, everyday life. Well, they are in my everyday life because it's part of my life, but, you know, like they're so separated from what we have here as, you know, doing a season in Meyerhofen, for example, or something like that. You know, it's like a whole nother world of thing. Yeah. It's really, really exciting.
And then when you come across here, it's like different world again.
Yeah, different world again. And which is equally exciting because, like, I don't know, because I've been doing both, I think, for so long now, I know kind of what to expect. And that excites me so much because, you know, there's always going to be new and different adventures or new people and new this and new that. But at the core, you're just like, fuck yeah, we're going to do that.
See, you love both sides of what you do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, for sure, if, like one, not even if, when, one day, like the professional snowboarding aspect of my life sort of dries up or whatever, you know, like I will still be super, super keen to like pursue the film and television industry because, like I said earlier, it's based off contracts, you know, you work for 4 months or however long the shoot might be, eight months or something like that. And then it's up to you whether you want to chase the next job or you want to do nothing for a month or a week or half a year or whatever, you know, like I would follow that for sure.
Living the dream.
Yeah. Yeah. Work for the lifestyle. When I was building in between those winters, you know, I was kind of at that point living for Friday so you can have weekend and have a good time and go skateboarding or go surfing or whatever you want to do. But how I always kept myself motivated and kept it interesting is because I always knew there was an end goal. It was like, yeah, I'm going to do this for 5 months and then at the end of that 5 months, I'm going to go and I'm going to go do a season and like do what I want to do and have the best fun, you know, like just loading up all this pre-happiness, you know, and then
pre-happiness.
And then you cash in on that shit. I don't think it's that difficult for everyone to try and achieve that kind of stuff, you know, no. But you have to have that mindset of like, I work for how I want to live. I don't live for my work or whatever, yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that a lot of people probably could adopt, but they don't realize they can adopt mm-hmm. that attitude, which is interesting.
Yeah.
John Weaver was on. He's the kind of guy who sets a goal and goes, right, what do I need to achieve that goal? And then works his way back. And it's worked so well for him.
Yeah.
In that way.
Oh man, slick. That guy is, I don't know. I want to say that guy is like the anomaly or whatever, but he is just so brilliant at everything that he puts his mind to. Like as long as I've known him, he's incredible. Like I'm going to do this and then just does it.
Yeah.
You know, just like, he could give advice to like so many people.
Yeah,
his knowledge and like world experience and just everything. He's a very very smart man.
Yeah, he's got his head screwed on.
Yeah,
Anti Blueprint Project. Get the book.
Exactly.
He wrote it.
Yep.
He knows what he's on about.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
I know.
Just that alternative lifestyle thing, man.
This is what I mean. Like that's why John was a great guest to have on because. Mm-hmm. What he's written about is essentially what I'm trying to inspire people in is, you know, you don't always have to follow the rat race.
Yeah, don't you follow the norms, man.
Yeah, you can step out of it. And like you said earlier, you've got to embrace it. So, often it brings more opportunities than you can ever imagine. I mean,
exactly, yeah.
Did I think 8 years ago when I left my job in the local council offices that I was going to be making a podcast and talking to a Ranger Rowley.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't.
No, but yeah, you know, you're right. Like, you just can't assume or predict these kind of things, man. You just got to go with it. And then, like, that will take you so far.
Yeah.
Just going with it.
You just got to step out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's freaking hard, but it works.
Yep. Yep. A lot of people downplay or give shit to someone who's like a yes man or something like, yeah. But I think that's like a really good attitude or trait to have, you know, just saying yep and see what happens, you know, like just not closing yourself off, not worry, not like not too overthinking the consequences and things like that and just let what be and just fucking roll with it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. If I had been like at all intimidated or, you know, worried about what might happen if I traveled to Austria and done a season in Meyerhofen, I have no idea where my life would be right now.
I'm not quite so much of a go-getter, so I had people basically pushing
you. Yeah, you should do that. You should do that. Yeah. Well, no, to be fair, I mean...
I was so lucky that people went, go and do this.
Yeah, 100%. And to be fair, like, I had mum pushing me too, because she, like I said, she was chalet chick in Switzerland. She did, like, a couple of seasons, you know, she was getting afterlife.
What's your mum's name?
My mum's in Jenny Brown. Aww. She's the best. She's my fucking hero.
Shout out to Jenny.
Yeah, shouts Jenny. You know, she was always super encouraging and like I never once ever felt, you know, doubtful about a decision you might want to make. You know, it was always just like, you can do that shit, you know, like if you don't want to do it, don't do it. But you can do it. You know, there's no like, oh, but if you do it, it might not happen. You know, something might happen. There was never like a negative tone about like, you know, but if you do it, then when you come back, you might not have the position at the job that you would have had if you had stayed here for that 6 months that you went away for or something like that. Yeah. It'd be like, fuck, you're probably going to come back with way more experience, be way more valuable to any other person.
It's not, you know, like you're going to get nothing out of it. There's always going to be something.
That's it. Yeah, that's a great way to say it. Yeah.
When was the moment you realized that you had kind of got to where you want to be? Was there sort of a realization moment that you realized, oh, I'm doing exactly what I want?
No. Sure, no.
Do you know you're doing exactly what you wanted?
No, no. I think that's the thing. I think that's like the important thing. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, for real, I don't. Yeah, I'm cool with it. And like, I'm still waiting for that moment because I think not recognizing that moment is like a crucial factor in keeping this momentum rolling, you know, like if you're like, oh wait, I've done it, or like, oh shit,
you don't want to get complacent.
Yeah, I'm where I want to be. I'm nowhere near where I want to be because I don't know where I want to be, if that makes sense, you know? Like
it does. Like, the dream was to be a pro snowboarder. You've got that dream, but then...
You don't know what that dream entails. Like, yeah, I want to be a pro snowboarder, but, like, it's a dream within a dream. What does that entail? And I'm still figuring out all of that stuff, you know? Like, that happens day by day kind of shit, you know? Like, I know the basics, and I know, like, how to, like, juggle this... lifestyle and travel and, you know, all of this kind of thing. But, like, I don't know. There was no, like, I've made it moment, you know, because no. I definitely haven't. And I don't think, like, you ever can. If you're in that mindset of, like, there's no end to this, you know, there's no finish line. So there's no moment where you're going to be like, made it, cracked it, done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about enjoying the journey.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another great quote with that. It's like, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey or some shit, they say. They say some shit about that. Yeah, no, but that's a really good question, though, because, to be fair, I've never thought about that. Like, I've never thought about, like what's the end game in this? It's like, just ride this shit until the wheels fall off, or, you know, like, yeah, it's good. It's a really good question. Maybe makes me think. Yeah. I'm going to have to take some time to think about that one.
Well, the interesting thing is, from the beginning of this interview to now, we realise that you have achieved your initial dream, but you're still, you know, continuing for more, and not even more, just content and enjoying life and still living life to the fullest.
Living every
day as it comes. And that's quite refreshing, really.
Yeah.
Like you say, a lot of people do go into the rat race and,
Get trapped or something.
It's so easy to get stuck in that, for sure.
This
life isn't for everyone either, you know. For other people, this is like hell for them, but they probably won't be listening to the podcast.
But maybe we could inspire them. Get out their comfort zone, like you say, and I don't know.
If they've got that little niggling feeling inside them that goes, oh, perhaps I want to go and do that. That's what I'm here for. I'm here to get that little feeling.
Go do a week holiday in Bansko and see what happens, man. It might change your whole perspective on shit. I don't know. I don't know if it sounds bad to say, like, if you have no aspirations or whatever, but if you're always aspiring for this end goal or to make it or whatever, however you want to call it, then it finishes.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that, that should last a lifetime.
What's the best advice you've ever been given?
Best advice, probably... I don't know, just from my mum again, because she's an amazing person. She's just like, if you think you can do it, you can do it.
Yeah.
So just do it. Like, why would you, don't second guess yourself. Don't question. Don't think about, you know, all of these repercussions or, you know, it sounds silly to say, like, repercussions, because it sounds kind of like, oh shit, I'll just do it with no thought of what's going to happen. But, like, if you're confident and you think you can do it, just do it.
Yeah,
you know, like, what's stopping you?
Yeah.
Just do it. Only yourself.
I think that's really good advice.
Just do whatever. Do it. If you want to do it, just do it, man. And
just do it.
Just do it.
Nah. I feel like Nike stole that.
Yeah, they stole that from me.
What's the best thing about doing season work and living and working abroad?
Unpredictability. Everything is just... so unpredictable from day to day. Like, when you leave your comfort zone of home or whatever it might be, all of a sudden everything just becomes so sporadic, I guess would be a good way to describe it. Like, it just, like, plans just get thrown out the window.
Yeah.
You can't plan anything. Yeah, it's amazing. I think that's probably the good answer for that.
unpredictability and spontaneity.
That's the word I was going. Thank you, Gina. That was the word, spontaneity. Yeah,
I got told off by my mum for not including this in Maria's interview. But because it's my mum's favorite question, is there one thing you take with you everywhere you go, or alternatively, do you have, like, a travel hack?
There's definitely one thing I always take with me. My half-brother, like, I think it was my 21st birthday. Maybe it was my 20th. He gave me, like, this really dope piece of greenstone. It's like Poanamu, which is like a really... it's like a traditional New Zealand stone. Māoris wore it as, like, a dress piece or something. It's like this really nice... looks like jade. It's kind of like jade, but it's Poanamu.
Cool.
So I have that, and I always keep that in my travel bag, and I don't really fly without it. It kind of feels like a safety little thing, you know, like family sort of thing. I always travel with that. What else do I always travel with? That's kind of like my most, like, I've had that for fucking ages, man. I've had that 19 years. This little piece of greenstone, which is dope. What else do I, like a travel hack? Oh, I always see these travel hack things on YouTube or like Instagram or whatever, you know, like I would be stoked if I was in the position to like spit some game on some travel hack that I'd be like, yeah, do this, guys, you know? But
Lauren did it.
What did Lauren have? Oh, the pillow. Yeah, the pillow. Okay.
No, it's not a competition, Rolly, and you're not a competitive person,
I'm not
remember?
A competitive person. No, not at all.
I've seen you play mini golf, just so we're clear.
Oh, yeah. I want to win the mini golf. That's not a contest. No contest, though. No, but it's funny that you mentioned Lauren, because I've never, ever traveled with a travel pillow, ever. Just on that travel pillow topic thing, here's one that I always 100% do. So when I get on the aeroplane first, you know when you get the little cushion that you get? You know, the little pillow that they give you on your seat?
I haven't been on a plane.
Oh, you haven't been on a plane in a while?
Not for a while.
So, Gina, when you get on a plane, like for a long-distance flight.
Yeah, I've only been on one long-distance flight.
Ever in your life?
Yeah, when I went to Bali.
Yeah, really? I don't know if this is a hack or anything, but this is what I do every single time. On those long-haul flights, when you get given a pillow and you're like sitting in coach or whatever, instead of using it as a pillow, I always put it in my lower back. So it gives you a little bit more back support. And then you steal the person sitting next to you's blanket before they sit down. You got to get on the plane first at this stage, by the way. And then you tell the air hostess that they don't have a blanket on their seat. So they get given another blanket, of course, because they always have spares. You get two blankets, then you use that first blanket as the pillow, and then you blanket yourself with your regular blanket, cozy. But the most important thing is the pillow in the lower back for that lumbar support, maybe? Yeah, that's crucial, because if you sit slouched or whatever on those things, because those seats don't really recline too far. But if you can imagine having a pillow, and like, you know what I'm talking about right now, like there, like it holds your back up and it keeps you straight instead of sagging down like that. Yeah, it's very, very crucial. So Lauren might have bought one to put in between the seats, but if you take the person's next to yours before they sit down and ask the air hostess for another one because they don't have one, then you're golden.
Winning. Thrifty.
No one's, no one can afford to buy air pillows, man. Blow up pillows.
Yeah, Lauren.
Yeah. What are you, rich? It's because she works on the boats, right?
She works on the super yachts, yeah. They call him Roland Thrifty Brown.
Yeah, man, just out here saving money, man.
Topping and tailing.
Yeah, topping and tailing, saving money.
Poor Maria.
That was a while ago. It was 2 years ago, man. That was good. No, but that is a serious tip. You've never done that. You need that.
So the only thing that's really left, and I don't know if you managed to think of anyone, is there anyone you would like to nominate to come on the show and have a chat with me?
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Did anyone nominate Tom West yet?
John Weaver did.
He did. I think Tom West would be super interesting to hear from. That guy, I think he embodies that seasoneer lifestyle to the fullest, even though he's not anymore. He's like a true example of just taking a leap, going to a place where you might not know what to expect, what, you know, out of your comfort zone sort of thing, and then just rolling with it. And then he's been here 20 years, owns a couple of houses, lived here his whole, you know, now this is his life. Now this place has become his life, you know? Yeah. Sure. He would have some really good insight and some fucking wild stories. For sure, for you.
No doubt. Anyone else?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I feel like I'm just going to say people who have already been nominated. Like, they're so, like, Henry Jackson would be another one for me. John Weaver, Tom West, Henry Jackson, they're like some of the first people that I ever met when I came here by myself from New Zealand in 2000, you know, like they're some of the first people that I ever met when I started traveling abroad. And they're still like some of my closest friends today. There's so many awesome times that have been wrapped up into this past 20 years, you know, like it's fucking crazy. Yeah. The amount of smiles I've had and shit and laughter that I've had over these years, they are true legends. And if anyone has any advice for anyone to do, not necessarily ski or snowboard industry or anything like that, but just life lessons, those guys have tons of insight, you know, and experience, you know. If the chance came up, I would not definitely nominate my mum. She's a well of experience and knowledge. Jenny Brown, I would have a chat to her about some things.
Do you reckon Jenny would come on and have a chat with about her seasons being chalet girl?
For sure. She's a very cool lady. She's open to all of that kind of stuff. And she's got plenty of time on her hands. She's like retired in New Zealand now. She's got doing nothing, man.
Got some good insight. She's obviously got some good advice.
I think she's got some great advice.
Yeah.
She's got some great life tips.
So what's next for you, Rowley? What are you going to do next?
So I'm still sort of stuck here in Europe, as New Zealand and Australia are both closed.
Yeah.
At the time that we're recording this anyway, I don't know when it's going to be played. But as of now, New Zealand is closed until at least 31st of July.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no chance of going home
before
then. So I'm kind of just resigned to being here, which, don't get me wrong, I love. Like, I wouldn't change that. Like, if anything, now I've kind of got the fear of leaving, if that makes sense, you know. Like, I've become so comfortable and accustomed to where I am now that
like
any change would be super weird for me. So yeah, to talk realistically about what I kind of want to do and what I want to plan is, like, maybe bounce from here June, July-ish, head back to New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And then be there for our winter and spend another winter back at home riding New Zealand mountains and things like that. And then go back to Australia to work on the show again, I'm a Celebrity. I think it's the 20-year anniversary this year coming up. Yeah, that's going to be a big one, 20-year anniversary. So I really want to be part of that. So I'll do anything that I can to make myself available to be in Australia
for
that time of shooting. And then, of course, once that's done, just fucking fly back to Europe. Boom. When and if I leave, you know, like, this will always feel like coming back to my base. When I leave, it'll only ever be for the amount of time to come back again.
Rowley, thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This has been so much fun, man. This is actually the first one of these podcasts I've ever done. So I'm super honored that I was here to speak to you about all this.
Hopefully, after your next adventures, you'll come in again and have a chat with me.
Oh, yeah, for sure, because I don't even know what's going to happen. Everything is going to be a surprise. I'm just going to go and experience it, and then I'll tell you all about it.
Perfect. Can't wait for you to come back.
Cheers, man. I'm hyped.
These interviews are just getting more and more fun. What an absolute honour to hang out with Ranger Rowley. Thank you so much again to the legend that is Rowley Morley Brown for coming on the show today. If you enjoyed that and are new to the show, then why not scroll back through our earlier episodes, starting with episode 1, where I talked to the wonderful Lauren Lamari about snowy winters and super yacht summers. As always, head across to the show notes for any links relating to today's show. You can now click to subscribe on any podcast platform to get new releases of this show as they come out, so please click and subscribe. A massive thank you to our sponsors Mike's Sports Bar in Meyerhofen, Wandering Woods Coffee in the UK, and of course thank you to Mondo Wave for the music. Thanks for tuning in, guys, and I look forward to seeing you all again next time.